Well, hello there, TGP. It's Monday, June 27th, 2022. This is In the Know, episode 45. Just a handful of announcements for us. Just three. June the 30th, that is Thursday, right? Tuesday is the 28th, Wednesday is the 29th, Thursday is the 30th, 6 p.m. at Daniel Blazik's house. We are going to have our men's gathering. James Littleton is going to smoke or roast some prime rib for us. I don't remember which it's going to be. It's going to be delicious. We're asking that you bring $5 if you're going to come to help offset the cost of that meat. It's going to be a great time. If you want to ride with someone, you can certainly work that out. You can meet in Pineville and drive together because it's in LeCount. July the 24th, Sunday evening service at 5 p.m. And then, as always, in the newsletter, you can find the building improvement Walmart list if you want to buy something there. Let me do a little bit of sermon follow-up now. Yesterday, I talked about the emotion that the brothers were feeling that basically made them silent in the presence of Joseph. And the ESV, I kind of made the contention that I think the ESV undertranslates that word if it means the way that we normally mean it. Now, used to, the word dismayed probably meant something like that, but now I feel like it's an undertranslation. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to give a few of the places that that word is used in different ways and then show you more of the meaning that's behind that word and what the author of Genesis is probably trying to convey there. So in Judges chapter 20, verse 41, it says, "The men of Israel turned, and the men of Benjamin were dismayed, for they saw that disaster was close upon them." So there's the same word, dismayed, but there's this war that happens. It's terrible circumstances for the people of God, but this war happens between all of Israel and the tribe of Benjamin. And the tribe of Benjamin sees that they have been, like, that their one of their cities has been burned behind them. And then the men who they thought were fleeing turn on them, and they realize that they're hemmed in before and behind by their enemy, and disaster is close at hand, and they feel this impending sense of doom. They're dismayed. In Isaiah chapter 13, verses 6 through 8, it says, "Wait, for the day of the Lord is near. As destruction from the Almighty, it will come. Therefore, all hands will be feeble, and every human heart will melt. They will be dismayed. Pangs and agony will seize them. They will be in anguish like a woman in labor. They will look aghast at one another. Their faces will be aflame." So again, you sense that dismay is a little bit more forceful of a word, the word behind it. And then I mentioned this one yesterday, 1 Samuel 28, verses 20 and 21. "Then Saul fell at once, full length on the ground, filled with fear because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten nothing all day and all night. And the woman came to Saul, and when she saw that he was terrified," there's that word, "she said to him, 'Behold, your servant has obeyed you. I've taken my life in my hand and have listened to what you've said to me.'" And then in Job 22:10, one of Job's friends says, "Therefore, snares are all around you, and sudden terror overwhelms you." And that word "overwhelms" is the same word used for dismayed. So you hear this sense of there's doom and judgment and bad things that are impending, and it's the forefront of your mind. It's all you can see, and you sense it. And it's that like primal fear that wells up within you when you feel that sense of impending doom. That's what the brothers were experiencing, not just being disheartened or discouraged, but actually this terror. Okay, now I want to talk about Joseph's emotions. One commentator points out that while the brothers were so terrified they couldn't speak, Joseph had kind of the opposite problem. He was so moved, he couldn't hold it in. There is this overflow of pent-up emotions from Joseph. He's clearly moved to compassion for his brothers, and he freely expresses it in the form of weeping. This was actually thought to be unbecoming, maybe even abominable in Egyptian culture, which is why most commentators believe he made everyone leave so that he could have this private moment with his brothers. He realized, I'm about to become very undignified in their sight by expressing my emotions as freely as I want to. So everybody leave. Let me be alone with these men. The problem is, however, that his emotions and his expression thereof were so intense that everybody heard the sound of his voice and weeping, including Pharaoh's household. You can read that in chapter 45, verse 2. As I studied the language this week, the phrase in verse 2, he wept aloud, could literally be translated something like, he gave up a loud cry or a loud voice of weeping. It's more than just audible crying. This is something like heaving, sobbing, coupled with inarticulate emotions that can only be captured with sighs and groans. This is 20 years of emotion pent up like a dam that bursts when he sees their remorse and their willingness to give themselves up for their brother. It's the convergence of a number of emotions, things that I thought about might be things like sorrow, anguish, anger, compassion, love, joy, regret, an acute ache over what was lost, peace, elation, and forgiveness all at one time. And it's likely that he didn't know how to be other than just sobbing. Like, to borrow a phrase from our culture that I usually only use ironically, Joseph literally had all the feels. And it broke down his ability to control and express it in any other way than simply intense weeping that could be heard down the hall and prevented this private moment from remaining so. Hopefully, this helps bring our text in Genesis 45 down from the level of like nebulous ideology into the real life, flesh and blood drama that it was. Joseph was a real guy with real emotions, and he gave full vent to them in this climactic and cathartic moment. And finally, I want to make a quick comment on God's sovereignty and forgiveness. I think so often we view God's sovereignty as a source of comfort, encouragement, wonder, and awe. And let me just say, this is right and good. We ought to be mystified by his sovereignty. But what was unique this week for me was seeing how God's sovereignty also has this additional application of making us forgiving. There are many other attributes of God that would more readily come into our minds when we think of motives and reasons for forgiveness. So you just imagine God's patience, compassion, grace, mercy, loving kindness. Like, those would be among the first on our lips if we were asked, hey, what characteristic of God should make you forgiving? But Joseph clearly reasons from God's sovereignty and his ability to work good from evil. Like, and that's the reason that he forgives his brothers. At the heart of his forgiving impulse is God's sovereignty. This was an astounding realization this week, and the Lord dealt with me very personally on areas that I needed to relinquish the debts of others toward me if I were going to believe rightly his sovereignty. It's as if he was impressing upon my heart, if you really trust my sovereignty, then you can and should let that go. I can't say I'm fully there yet, but this gave me a much needed nudge in the right direction. I pray it was that way for you as well. It would be helpful for us all to spend some time dwelling on why it is that God's sovereignty leads us toward forgiveness and how God might want us to walk out this lifelong process of reconciliation, both in asking for and in giving forgiveness. It's true that we will either trust God's sovereignty and honor Christ's perfect sacrifice by being quick to forgive and quick to give grace, or we will lay hold of anger, bitterness, wrath, and all the like, and relinquish a hearty view of God's sovereignty, and thus bring dishonor upon the wondrous and beautiful mystifying sacrifice of Jesus. For my part, I want to be the type of person who allows God's sovereignty to have its way in my heart to such an extent that I'm willing to forgive others of their sins. Forgiven people forgive people, as do those who trust God's sovereignty. So let's not be cancel culture Christians, but rather be forgivers. And like Joseph, forgiveness ought not be just a conscious decision not to hold a wrong against someone, but to be actively kind toward the other who has offended us. Like, it goes further than a neutral attitude toward someone and filters down into kindness beyond what a person deserves. That's how Joseph acted toward his brothers, right? He committed himself to provide for his father and brothers so they wouldn't come to poverty and ruin, Genesis 45:11. And that's how Christ treats us, and that's how we are to treat others, especially those in our family and in our faith family. So I pray that you have a great week. I love you, people.